Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Thank you for tuning in. ModPath Chat has so far reached audiences in 110 countries with over 24,000 downloads. So we are thrilled you are here today to help me welcome our distinguished guest, Dr. Rajal Shah. Rajal is a professor of pathology at UT Southwestern, and he's a leader in neurologic pathology. He is a prolific author with over 150 publications and 2 books. So far. During his tenure at University of Michigan, he played a critical role in the discovery of temporis erg fusion. Today, we will be discussing his team's latest publication in Modern Path on genomic and morphologic features of radio-resistant prostate cancer. So welcome to ModPath Chat, Rajal.
Thank you very much, George, for kind introduction. Very much appreciate this opportunity to do a podcast for Modern Pathology Journal. It's quite an honor. Happy to discuss our findings.
The honor is ours. I still remember, Rajal, when we were both junior faculty and talking about temporis erg, and you're giving us some cues on how to do the fish at Hopkins. So we go back a long time. And we didn't look exactly like this, for those of you who are seeing us on the YouTube channel. We looked a little bit younger. So let's get to the topic. What drove you to do the study?
So, George, you are aware that locally relapsed prostate cancer after radiation therapy is associated with significant morbidity and mortality. What causes prostate cancer to develop resistance to radiation therapy and recur, specifically morphological and molecular consequences that may contribute to radiation therapy resistance and local recurrence are really poorly understood. So, in this study, we aim to understand the phenotypic and genotypic diversity of radio recurrent prostate cancer, which can facilitate our understanding in the mechanisms of radio resistance, as well as in designing more optimal patient management. That's what our major objective for this particular study.
Fair enough. And you do have a very unique cohort. We'll talk about it in a second, study design, but something like 53 patients who had radio resistance and needed what's called salvage radical prostatectomy after being treated with that. And clearly, that's a huge strength to have such a large cohort. So tell us a little bit about study design before we move on and talk about the findings.
So I think, George, as you referred, a salvage radical prostatectomy is a pretty unique and somewhat rare patient cohort because local recurrence often is not detected after radiation therapy, and there is always a risk of surgical complications because of prior radiation. So a lot of institutions don't offer this type of treatment modalities. But we had 53 patients who were treated with primary radiation who failed and then subsequently underwent salvage radical prostatectomy. So we analyze tumor focality, clinicopathological features and genomic characteristics from this radio-recurrent prostate tissue from salvage radical prostatectomies. And that is our kind of primary study design.
And just to touch a little bit on the molecular, some serious gene panel, right? Like on a subset of them, and you did paired tumors and
yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we did both DNA and RNA sequencing using a targeted 1,425 gene panel, which is a pretty broad coverage for genomic associations. And we selected 10 most representative samples, which were enriched in specific pathologies that I will be discussing today with you. And then we did the tumor mutational burden, copy number alterations, and RNA sequencing, DNA sequencing for these samples, and all of them had matched normal tissue to study potential germline alterations.
Excellent. So it couldn't get any better. Over 1,400 gene panel, and you have match benign for the germline. So this is as elegant as it gets. So let's start with the simple stuff, with the clinical pathologic and the morphology. What was the take-home message here?
Yeah, so I think what we really found very interesting is that this locally recurrent advanced prostate cancers are enriching cribriform morphologies, which included both intraductal carcinoma and cribriform Gleason pattern 4 prostate cancer. As we know that there has been a lot of literature and growing evidence that these morphologies are associated with aggressive clinical outcomes or disease outcome. So that is our number one observation, and this was supported by three separate pieces of data. We had an overrepresentation of almost 80% of samples demonstrated cribriform morphologies in this particular cohort compared to like 30 to 35%, which is average reported in clinically localized treatment naive prostate cancer from Cancer Genome Atlas, as well as Canadian Cancer Network's radical prostatectomy data sets. So that is number one observation. Number two is we had 16 patients with grade group 1 prostate cancer at pre-biopsy samples. And of these patients, over 80% had a cribriform morphologies only at the time of radical prostatectomy. As we know that grade group 1 prostate cancer would not have cribriform morphology. So that also indicates that these morphologies were not present or they were not dominant clone in significant number of these pre-treatment biopsy samples. And finally, when we did a tumor focality assessment, we know that clinically localized treatment naive prostate samples typically are multifocal diseases composed of index tumor and then separate smaller tumor nodules. So here in this particular cohort, majority of samples had a unifocal disease. When we had a multifocal disease, cribriform morphologies were usually restricted to the index tumor, and smaller tumors had a non-cribriform or treatment-related changes. That were the findings. So I think these three pieces of data kind of from conclusion from morphological point of view clearly suggest that cribriform morphologies appears to be a hallmark of treatment emergent radio recurrent prostate cancer. And based on this over representation of these morphologies, as well as unifocal nature of these tumor samples at radical prostatectomy, they suggest that they represent resistant tumor clones, which might arise through selective pressure or radiation therapy induced changes. So that is our primary kind of observation in this particular.
Okay. So before we move to the molecular, I want to drill down a little bit on this, and because you mentioned, and this is an important point not to miss, you're using cribriform morphologies here as an umbrella that you have cribriform, not necessarily just in in the usual invasive cancer where we talk about grade pattern four for cribriform, but you're also counting in the presence of intraductal carcinoma that has cribriform morphology.
Yes.
And we don't have time to talk about that. There are issues about do you grade the invasive or non-invasive equally or not. That's not the point, but it's important to know that this cohort that has radio resistance is showing enrichments for both at the invasive sides and at the IDCP, the intraductal side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's an absolutely important point that we are not studying only invasive cribriform prostate cancer morphology. And as you know that now a lot of European studies have lumped these two. We try to separate them. So in our paper, when you read it, I think we try to separate these two morphologies individually as well. But what we are reporting is a collectively cribriform morphologies. And from clinical significance point of view, there is a lot of similar significance in these two morphologies.
Absolutely. And still, even if you do that, and I'm sure the same is comparing to data sets, like you said, historic, which around 30%, here's 80%, that's a lot. And the dominance of a unifocal disease, that's also a lot. So it all makes sense in terms of the scenario that you're drawing, that these are clones that resisted and end up progressing in grade into this cribriform pattern. There is more to it, right? By the way, these were clinically localized, but at the salvage time, pathologically, you did have some with lymph nodes, some with EPE.
Yes, absolutely. They were. I don't have the exact data in my thought process right now, but basically, this was a clinically advanced samples at the time of salvage radical prostatectomies. So that also corresponds to what we know about cribriform morphologies, that they are typically more likely to have lymph node metastasis, extraprostatic tumor extension, and we, like total, I believe, more than 70% of samples had some form of extraprostatic disease,
correct,
in this for us cohort.
And that's another point on the aggressiveness of this pattern. And it sounds like, regardless if it's intraductal or not, we'll see that will need more deciphering. But let's move on to the molecular. And on the molecular side, there are really some potentially very helpful findings, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I think, very important point that I would like to mention is that I think there were several genomic alterations with potential clinical significance and several clinical genomic associations which are known to be associated with advanced and metastatic prostate cancer. So these samples had a higher somatic tumor mutation events in these samples. Particularly notable mutation was one or more genes which are involved in DNA damage and repair pathway, what we typically refer to as a DDR genes, were altered in 70% of these samples. So that is number one important finding, which includes BRCA1 and 2, PALB2, BARD1, ATR, and several other DNA damage and repair genes that are involved in this pathway. So that is a very important finding. We also observed higher frequency of P10 loss, which is not surprising because cribriform morphologies has shown to have higher enrichment for P10 loss and P10 alterations. So over 50% of these samples had P10 loss in some form. And that is also of importance because P10 loss is associated with lethal prostate cancer progression, particularly in ERK non-rearranged cases based on some of this latest data. So, and I think more important this is that we have now targets for these particular genomic alterations. Deleterious mutations in DDR genes have shown to have a higher response for PARP inhibitors with survival advantage for patients with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancers. So that is a very, very important finding. TP53 mutations, which is also one form of DDR gene, would predict resistance to a newer generation of androgen receptor blocker treatments such as enzalutamide and abiraterone. So these are some of the important findings. We also had some other less frequently encountered genomic alterations like PRIM2, BRAF. Then there was also KMT2D, PIK3CA. They all have some form of targets that are potentially can be used for this type of samples and findings.
So really a treasure trove of findings, and you couldn't ask for more. You had pretty much predictive markers and genes that would predict response, and they can be targeted. And in addition to, you know, the story about the cribriform morphology and the way the tumor is unifocal and the absence of that pre-radiation, you have a story to tell now potentially on the progression under radiation and selective pressure. So, and it's important to tell the audience, whenever you look at a specimen post-radiation, you're trying to evaluate whether these have the radiation effect or not. And I think it goes without saying, that's why we didn't hammer on it, having a cribriform morphology, all that. These tumors did not show radiation effect, at least in these index lesions, correct?
That's a very important point, and I would like to emphasize that we had some samples which primarily showed treatment effect. We did not analyze those samples because those samples, in my point of view, they are not relevant for what we were trying to study. And I think we know that cancer that are recurrent without treatment morphologies are usually associated with more aggressive outcomes. So our study primarily focused on cancer samples without any treatment effect. And I think, as you said, that cribriform morphology would indicate that there was no treatment response to this particular treatment.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for this informative discussion, and thank you for doing such a study, which will definitely move the needle, because these are tough patients to treat. Salvage is kind of like the last resort, and now knowing that potentially there are targeted therapy with some predictive genes to response, that would be very helpful for these patients. As usual, Rajal, is always a pleasure to see you and meet with you. And thank you again for taking the time and doing this podcast for us.
Thank you very much, George, for this invitation. Very much appreciate this opportunity, and looking forward to seeing you and connecting with you again.
Sure. And we look forward for your next publication in Modern Path.
Sounds good.
No doubt about it. It's the best journal, so you might as well try.
Absolutely.
I have to put a plug in for this.
I'm proud of the success of the journal.
Thank you. It's because of people like you.
It is a wonderful reflection of where the pathology is going.
Thank you very much. We try, and we're lucky to have authors like you publish with us.
Thank you.
So long, everyone.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.